Hi, everyone. Welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Nick Rickrout.
And I'm Sophia Simonello.
And today we're back with a fun pod. We wanted to add in an episode about the recent Inside Out 2, which was a huge hit at the box office, so we can get into that and what general audiences think. But to do so, we are bringing back our Disney advisor, Ryan Lamb. Once again, he's been on multiple times in the past for our Disney draft. We talked about Mulan, lots of things. So welcome back, Ryan. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. You guys actually got me a really good time.
Oh, my God.
Stop. What is this reveal? No, you're not putting on mouse ears.
So just got off the phone with Bob number one. And Disney is back in business, baby. $155 million. I'm sorry, what's a Dune 2? I don't know. How about Moana 2? Zootopia 2? Avatar 3? Frozen 3? Toy Story 5? My sources say, cha-ching, Deadpool's going to bring in $200 million first weekend. So things are going well.
Well,
is there a Monsters, Inc. 4 coming? Is that what the Mickey ears are for? I know nobody else can see this, but you have a Sully and Mike Mickey ear.
And a Mickey t-shirt with sunglasses on. Ryan, you really, you know, I know podcasting is an audio format, but you really wanted to contribute to the whole experience here.
Yeah, you have to make the vibes work.
Yeah, the vibes are working, obviously, for you with Disney being so successful. I feel like Inside Out 2, though, this was not a huge surprise in how successful it was. But I think in terms of what we've seen recently, the box office so far this year, and especially over Memorial Day weekend, early summer, was really, really struggling. So it's really good news that Inside Out 2 had such a big weekend. I think I just didn't expect that this was going to be the biggest opening since Barbie, one of the greatest opening weekends for any animated film ever, and it had the best opening for an animated sequel other than The Incredibles 2.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, it was tracking less than 100 mil ahead of the weekend. And so for it to go from that to 155 is, I mean, really impressive and kind of shows that there is, you know, while there I think has been a little bit of trouble in Paradise lately, it's definitely showing that there is still a lot of value there within the Disney brands if they can just figure out how to leverage it correctly.
Do you think it's just families? Like, are they Disney fans? What's the discrepancy in the box office?
It's a sequel, so like I think like there's fans there, right? I mean, there's a known quantity. People loved Inside Out, the first one, and it was really popular. It made quite a bit of money as well, and was a big success. But they obviously have been struggling, like with Strange World, I think was the last.
Strange World, that was Disney, yeah. So Inside Out made $90 million opening weekend and $859 million worldwide over its full run. I'm assuming even that's going to be surpassed at this point. But you also see sequels that don't do as well, Disney included. And it's interesting to me. I think part of it maybe is just expanding the cast and adding people that people know from other shows and movies too. Like seeing Ayo Edebiri in there and just hearing her made me so happy. And that's why I laughed the most. So I think it's parts like that. And Maya Hawke and Adele, will list everyone's names in a second, but I was just curious if you thought like maybe, or if you saw so many people going out when you saw it too.
We saw it on Thursday night. We went to Cinemark because my beloved Carriage Place is closed. I had to go all the way to Polaris in Northern Columbus.
Oh my God, it closed?
I did see it on the XD screen there. So yeah, the Carriage Place closed, sadly.
Oh, that's so sad. Anyway, sorry, continue on. That was just a moment. I didn't realize one of our Columbus theaters had closed. Another casualty.
Yes. We saw it on the big screen. I mean, it was a pretty full showing, and it seemed like it was a lot of families. It was, you know, like a Thursday at like 6 p.m.
Yeah, that was similar to my experience.
I wonder, you know, like you said, Nick, oh, we think like, you know, this thing is probably going to eclipse Inside Out 1. But I do wonder, like, the Disney Plus of it all with folks still knowing, because I feel like that was kind of the previous conclusion of like, why are Disney movies struggling so much? And it's like, well, why bother going to the theater when you know it's just going to be on Disney Plus in 2 months? And if you've got a big family and it's a pain to drag all of your kids out to the theater and pay the theater prices and all the concessions, that it's just easier to, and cheaper to watch it on Disney Plus. And so I wonder if there is still going to be some element of Disney Plus in the long-term performance. But clearly it doesn't seem like it mattered for the opening.
Yeah. I mean, and even something like Elemental last year, which opened in a pretty weak fashion, had pretty good legs and ended up making a lot of money throughout the summer. So yeah, it's something that I think we keep having to think about, especially with Pixar, because of course, during the pandemic too, like Turning Red and Luca, those just went straight to Disney Plus. So it really did just become, I think, the standard for that streaming platform and for parents to just expect those movies to go there immediately so you wouldn't have to worry, or go there after not very long at all so you wouldn't have to worry about taking your kids to the theater. But I think another added element here is that it is so hot outside across the U.S. right now in particular.
Yeah.
And if you were looking for any kind of activity, the movies are a great option because it is, the air conditioning is cranking in there. Like, it is one of the few activities I think you can take your kids to right now. So I think that's part of it too. And the screening I went to, it was also on a Thursday night, and I was sitting next to a five-year-old. It was packed with families and with kids and was sold out. So I feel like it really is appealing to all audiences. Really, I mean, I think there were kids there that were too young to really understand what was happening in the movie, but were just basically there to appreciate the lights and the shapes of the characters, and they laughed quite a bit. And then all the way up to adults, I think, who understood or maybe enjoyed the deeper thematic elements to the movie, too, in the way that most successful Pixar films do. We'll talk about whether or not we found this one as successful as some of the others in a bit.
Yeah, you know, you mentioning just the heat wave aspect of it all, and it's like, I feel like we're living through a plot line from Entourage, you know, like Vincent Chase's movie opening and the power going out in the valley. Oh, my God.
And maybe one more reason, just how many formats it's been playing in. I saw this in the huge IMAX at Lincoln Square, but it's also in Dolby. It's also in 3D and regular. And Ryan, you mentioned the XD at Cinemark. And I think having it in so many theaters like that too, in formats, also helps it. Maybe some extra ticket cost there, but I don't think that's why it did so well either, but maybe just helped it a little bit. We're already getting very into the film. We'll talk about it more in a minute, but I think just generally in talking about Pixar, and Ryan, why we love having you on, how did you feel about the original Inside Out?
So I've actually only seen the original Inside Out once. I don't remember a whole lot about it other than I think I cried. I remember really liking it, but it just was never a movie that like I sought out again. You know, it's not like one of those other Disney movies like Moana, where it's like I watched that movie 10 times. It's one of those other Disney movies where it's still, the quality is really strong, but for some reason, like the rewatchability doesn't really stick out to me.
So you didn't rewatch it before you saw 2?
No, I thought about it, but I didn't. I got lazy. Did you guys rewatch it?
I did. It was the first time I had seen it since I saw it in theaters back when it came out. Inside Out, this is a very hot take, is not one of my favorite Pixar movies. I'm actually not a huge Pete Docter fan. I think that when Inside Out came out, it was sort of an interesting inflection point for Pixar, because that is when, I think after this movie, they really start getting into these more high concept films that feel sometimes like therapy sessions, or like they're purposefully trying to make you cry, as
like
opposed
Soul.
To just existing. Yes, like Soul. I think that Soul is a perfect example of that, another Pete Docter Pixar film. But Inside Out, I think I appreciated some of the creative aspects, whereas others felt, I think, a bit more flat to me. And I understand why people love it and are really attached to it, but it just paled in comparison to some of my favorite Pixar films, which were just beyond creative. And that, I think, just felt like really simple stories with a high level of execution. And I think with Inside Out, and even more so with Inside Out 2, we see that Pixar is actually quite behind in animation now compared to some other films that we've seen. And I first started to notice this, I think, with the way that the humans were drawn in the first Inside Out. So, yeah, it's not a favorite of mine, but I was still excited to see 2 because of the new characters, which we'll talk about in a minute.
I did rewatch it as well, and I guess part of me was worried that it wouldn't hold up, but in the end, I ended up loving it as much as I did originally. I think in a way that I was trying to frame it for a kid's perspective and an adult, and I think it worked in both ways. It's not my favorite Pixar. I think we've talked about this, all three of us together, but like up there for me is WALL-E, The Incredibles, which I know both of you don't agree with.
You win some, you lose some.
And the Toy Stories. Those are probably up there in my favorites. Do you guys have a favorite or like a top few?
I feel like, I hope this is consistent with what I've said in the past, because I'm sure we've talked about it, but Finding Nemo, I think, is probably my favorite. And that just has to do with how old I was when it came out, and then just what a wonderful story it was. I mean, it was very early Pixar, and, you know, they were definitely, you know, innovating within the industry and doing just a lot of great work.
My favorite is easily Ratatouille. I love, love, love that movie. And I rewatched it before I rewatched Inside Out. I was spending a lot of time on Disney Plus, oddly, in preparation for all of this, but I just adore it. And I think it's, again, one of those really creative stories. I love the Parisian setting. I think that Remy is just the most adorable little character. And I hate rats living in New York. So to think about how much I love this movie about a little rat chef, and I'm a Francophile too. So I think it's just, it's perfect.
So Ratatouille 2, which is already hard enough to say, should be about Pizza Rat.
Well, they're Ratatouille 2 / Ratatouille, the live action version with Josh O'Connor.
Wait, is it Ratatouille?
Yeah, you just put the number 2 right in the middle of it.
You know, I wouldn't put it past Bob Iger at this point. Whatever makes money.
I know, right?
Well, let's get into Inside Out 2 and see how we think about this as a sequel. First, the description. Teenage Riley's mind headquarters is undergoing a sudden demolition to make room for something entirely unexpected. New emotions. Joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust, who've long been running a successful operation by all accounts, aren't sure how to feel when anxiety shows up. And it looks like she's not alone. This was directed by Kelsey Mann. It's voiced by Amy Poehler as Joy, Kensington Tallman as Riley, Phyllis Smith as Sadness, Tony Hale as Fear, Lewis Black as Anger, Liza Lapira as Disgust, and then the new emotions include Maya Hawke as Anxiety, Ayo Edebiri as Envy, Adele Exarchopoulos as Ennui, and Paul Walter Hauser. Oh my God, jump scare, I did not know that. As
Wait,
embarrassment.
What? You did it? Oh my God, I was laughing so hard because I realized that, Ryan, this is your second Paul Walter Hauser film on Oscar Wilde because you did Cruella as well.
I'm sitting here wondering, who is Paul Walter Hauser? Did embarrassment speak in the movie?
That's the best part about his starring role here is that we don't really hear from him really at all. He kind of just grunts.
Well, you know, one thing about that lineup that I just wanted to point out is that I was really excited to see the director was a woman, Kelsey Mann, except that I found out this is actually a Kelsey Grammer situation and that Kelsey Mann is indeed a man. And so, yeah, temporarily excited for some advancement, but didn't actually pan out.
It's going to have to wait.
Well, I think the Paul Walter Hauser thing, too, is because I haven't seen him in one press video or photo. Like, it's all Ayo and Maya, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I think even part of that for me is that I didn't hear Mindy Kaling, and I spent so much of the movie trying to think it was her, and I think in the end finally realizing it wasn't, and that made me upset too.
So yeah. You definitely felt like you missed her.
I did. I mean, everyone else returned.
Bill Hader also didn't return. So Tony Hale replaced him. And actually, I think to your point, Nick, like Tony Hale, I think did a really great job.
Yeah.
Whereas I did feel Mindy's absence a little bit. But I was reading up a little bit about this, and Disney paid Amy Poehler reportedly $5 million to return as Joy, and then offered the other emotions $100,000. And so if I was Mindy Kaling, you know, I've got some other work to do. Sophia, do you have feelings about that?
Oof. I mean, that's rough. So I understand it, but yes, I think to your point, Ryan, Tony Hale did so good, or just emulated him so well. And what we got from Fear in the first movie, that I didn't even question it at any moment.
It's not that I think he has the same performance as Bill Hader, but I think he just encapsulates the character so well that you don't miss Bill Hader.
Yeah.
I agree. I felt similarly. And I had read beforehand that Tony Hale and Liza Lapira were the newcomers to the cast, replacing Mindy Kaling and Bill Hader. So I kind of knew what to expect there, but I did think that Tony Hale really slipped right in, like you guys are saying, especially as a part of this core group of emotions that have been there for a while. He has some really funny one-off line readings there that I feel like really worked with Fear as a character. Okay, so I think just getting into general reactions of the movie, because we're kind of talking around it. Ryan, we can start with you. What did you think of Inside Out 2?
So I went into the movie pretty skeptical. I haven't really hated anything that I've seen Disney-wise lately, but I also haven't felt like really impressed by anything either. And then just seeing the upcoming slate of sequel after sequel after sequel, it just felt like, oh my gosh, is this just going to be the first of many cash grabs on their existing IP? Or is this actually going to be something that has heart and soul and feels special? And it honestly had an uphill battle as I started watching it, and my skepticism was there. But slowly but surely, it kind of chipped away at me. And by the end, I was crying again. And so it definitely really captured me. And I have to give them credit that having someone who came in with such a skeptical mindset and really winning me over by the end was a really impressive feat. And I think really speaks to them hitting the mark in the movie.
Nick, what about you?
I definitely went in not thinking that it was going to be better than Inside Out, because I connected with that emotionally. I was hoping that it would mirror some of that, but not necessarily in the exact same way, which is how I felt throughout parts of the movie. I think the initial part of the movie, it felt completely sanitized, and the score was like very overly whimsical, which I was not a fan of. But I think as the movie went on, it became more creative and tried to instill some newer things into the world. There was a lot of comedy with the emotions and just the names, and the audience was just dying around me. We had people cackling out of their chairs, especially for Poochie. And like that sequence, I actually really liked, and what they were trying to do and kind of make fun of themselves with animation and the different styles. So some of it I was very into, but I think the story as a whole fell flat to me. It felt very much like the first film remade in a slightly different way. There were some things that felt like it was retracting that made the ending of the first movie so wholesome and understanding and revelatory, I would say, for kids and in understanding emotions and how they work together. And I think most of this movie, they kind of forgot what they accomplished in that movie. So that to me was difficult. I think by the end, I felt okay. I didn't cry. I joked that like there are more emotions in this movie and I didn't feel any. But I think on the whole, like, it's fine for Disney, especially as a sequel. Like, this is what I have come to expect, which is a little disappointing and sad, but audiences are loving it. And I know that we don't necessarily align all the time, so that's okay.
I agree with you, Nick, that like, even with my skepticism, I didn't think that the start was really strong. And to your point about the score, like, I was reflecting on the movie today and I had like zero thoughts on the score at all. It wasn't a positive. It wasn't a negative. It was just there. But over time, it did work for me. And like you said, it worked for audiences.
It's interesting because I think I'm kind of in between both of you because I did rewatch Inside Out, like I said. But for me, because that film isn't really highly ranked on my Pixar list and it's just kind of in the middle, I didn't have really high expectations for Inside Out 2, and I didn't really feel like there was a steep drop-off for me in terms of quality between the first and the second movie. I did feel, though, like it was a remake in many aspects. Like, it was going back to that same story. Like, they were a little bit afraid, I think, to step outside the box in certain regards, especially with concepts like puberty. We didn't really get anything there, so I was surprised by that. Like, it really is just this one funny moment of this flashing red light and realizing that Riley has a pimple on her chin and needs to start wearing deodorant. But other than that, that was widely unexplored.
That's the introduction of all the new emotions, though. So I think you could argue that, like, you know, throughout the movie, as you're experiencing anxiety and ennui, and, you know, I don't think embarrassment comes along with puberty, but certainly, like, ennui is something that I think becomes much more present as a teenager.
Yeah.
And so I think, like, inherently those aspects are that, you know, baking in that puberty aspect. But I do get what you're saying, like, in terms of, like, the physical transformations were not as present. It was more focused and maybe on the emotional, which makes sense for a movie called Inside Out, right? Like,
yeah. And it is only 3 days. Like, how much can really happen in 3 days? I get that. But again, it's that feeling of me walking into something, maybe expecting one thing, and just feeling like they were trying to check off some boxes without going really deep into it, which I feel like for Inside Out, Nick, sort of like you were saying, the draw of that movie, the success of that movie is how you feel so connected to it through its simplicity. The fact that it's really focused and it lets those emotions breathe, I think really works for people in that movie. One of the things here with this one is we do spend much more time with human Riley, right? Like, outside of her mind. We spend much more time, you know, at this hockey camp as she's trying to figure out who she is. She's trying to impress these older girls. And I actually found those parts of it semi-successful in terms of this as like a hockey movie or a sports movie, if you will. And I really found those scenes. I think the reason why I did emotionally connect to this movie in some ways is that I just remember that time feeling so painful and so difficult, like figuring out the introduction of anxiety and what that feels like and trying to make friends and trying to impress older kids at your school and figuring out how you're going to fit in. That I locked into immediately. Whereas, okay, Riley moving from Minnesota to San Francisco in the first movie, it works for me for 5 minutes, and then I just don't care as much anymore. Whereas here, I related to it hard.
Moving across the country is not a universal experience, but going through puberty is. And so, you know, for me, it's like as a 33-year-old man, it's like, that's a long time ago. And so to go to this movie and be like reminded of all of these things. And honestly, like at points in the movie where I'm like covering my eyes and like shrinking back into the chair, like feeling so cringe from the things that Riley is doing. Like, I definitely like felt that, like the movie elicited those emotions from me really well. And so like those like were the touches that for me pulled me in and made me start to feel what the movie was doing more. And so even though, like, as I mentioned, like earlier, like narratively, the movie isn't necessarily the most straight line, most coherent, I think like the emotional cues in the movie are what really worked for me. And so like, as you make your way towards the end of the movie and, you know, we come to kind of the big conclusion where, you know, anxiety has taken over and has made all sorts of bad decisions. And Riley, you see her externally struggling, and then you see everything going on with anxiety, and then just like relating to, you know, how you felt those things in your own life. Like, that was for me, like the emotional moment. And I, you know, to the extent like, yeah, that was like when I cried in the movie, was that kind of peak of emotion, really like kind of like
captured me and made me just feel what Riley was feeling. And so that was really powerful. You know, I guess I can ask myself, like, to what extent, like, is that like an authentic like elicitation of emotion versus like, is the movie doing something that's like cheap to get a cry out of me? Like, cause certainly like there are movies that do that too, where like they just pull the right strings, even though they don't earn it, but it can still make you feel that emotion.
Yeah. And I thought about that too. I mean, on my rewatch for the first movie, I knew what was coming. I knew I had been emotional before, and I was like, will it happen again? Because I really hadn't been throughout the majority of my viewing. And the moment hits when joy and sadness connect and you understand how important sadness is to a person to feel joy afterwards. And I think that really hit me. And here, I think they missed the whole point of how emotions interact together. They really, again, regressed. And part of this had to do with the memories that were introduced in the first movie too. So the movie starts and you have all these memories with the two different emotions as in those balls. And then partway through the movie, it reverts to only having one colored emotions. So now we're in this world where the emotions aren't interacting, and it's not even that it's joy because, you know, she's gone. They're in the back of the mind or trying to get there. It's not even fear and anxiety or embarrassment and anxiety working together anymore. So now it's this one emotion feeling or experience, and obviously anxiety is trying to take over. But I think even there, the root of anxiety didn't feel organic or natural to me.
You know, I get what you're saying there, Nick, like in the sense that, like, you know, you mentioned in the first movie, it was like how emotions kind of interacted with each other. Whereas in this movie, it was these emotions were doing different things, driving Riley. But ultimately, like the fact that joy, you know, decided to hide all of the sad things and put it in the back of her brain, and then those all come crushing in because of anxiety doing her own thing, it didn't necessarily feel as directly connected in this movie. So like I understand like how maybe that doesn't come together as well and feel as good.
Yeah. And I mean, part of that is, yes, expecting things from the first movie, but it's, I think in the end that it just didn't learn from itself. That joy in the beginning of Inside Out 2, I think was more like her character from the beginning of Inside Out 1, not the end of it. And I think their emphasis on the emotions working together in this movie, particularly fear and anxiety and embarrassment and sadness, I loved those moments. I was like, okay, let's take it there. Let's do that. Because when the puberty siren does go off, which I loved as a callback from the first movie, you have the emotions reacting and failing to control her in a way that they think they can. And I think if the movie went in a different direction of, you know, having to work together, even with the new emotions, I think it could have been more successful and complex and layered, and not in an untouchable Pixar Disney way, in just like a more relatable way.
So like more relatable, like as in Inside Out 3 could be like the introduction of Prozac, you know, introduce some new medications to help us regulate these emotions.
Those SSRIs, they'll be introduced. A new alarm will go off. Well, I do think, though, that this movie's emphasis on anxiety is very successful, just in terms of how it feels to have anxiety. When that happens, I feel like no other emotion is present. Like, it does take over in a way that nothing else really can exist for you. I feel like I was really impressed by how, one, anxiety is introduced as a helpful figure, as someone who maybe can make you grow and be a little bit wiser to the people around you, and to not just be this uninhibited version of yourself, right? Like, that's something that is very real for when you're that age of figuring that out. And I found myself embarrassed of what Joy was doing in those early scenes. So I knew that that was working there. And in anxiety, I think introducing intrusive thoughts, different scenarios when Riley can't sleep the night before that scrimmage. I feel like that was really successful in terms of how it built up over the course of the movie. And I did feel, again, like anxiety was the star of the show. And in some aspects, that's just very real, that when you have anxiety, that happens. And on the other side of it, it does maybe feel like a bit of lazy storytelling. It's like we want to rely on this one new character and we don't want to build out the other characters as much. I did love Anhui, though.
Well, really quick, Anhui was great, but really quick, like, to challenge you, I mean, the first movie is about Joy. Like, obviously, yeah, there are other characters, but Joy is the main emotion. And I think this movie, I don't feel like it's fair to say lazy, but obviously, like, everyone has their own view there. But for me, it's like Maya Hawke's, you know, role as Anxiety, like, that is kind of like the Joy of this movie. Like, she is kind of the driver's seat behind why Riley is making decisions that she's making.
I can see that. And I think, like, it honestly, like, it worked for me for the most part, too, just because anxiety is such a dominant emotion and experience that you have, you know, throughout life. But as you get older, like, it is a really, really difficult thing. And I feel like in terms of the connection of the emotions, though, I did like how that came about near the end when they realize that they can't suppress all of these old memories and that all the emotions do have to come together. And Riley's true self wasn't the joyful self of the first movie or of the beginning of the story anymore. Like, this, I'm a good person, I'm positive, right? This whole, like, ball of light, positive ray of sunshine, that wasn't who she fully was anymore. It was this combination of the person that anxiety created, that manifestation of all of that self-doubt and all of those negative feelings combined with the positive ones. And I think that that's what it feels like to grow up. There's a really devastating line in the movie that I wish I could remember now that made me feel completely gutted, when it was just about how when you're an adult, you do lose joy. Like, it becomes harder and harder to find those big pockets of joy in your life. And I think we really do feel that throughout the movie. So, yeah, I'm a bit mixed, I would say, overall. But as I'm talking through it, I think certain things I am relating to and thinking about more. And I found myself talking specifically about anxiety in the movie. And it was funny, after I saw it, my sister and I just looked at each other. We were like, okay, so that was me 2 weeks ago. That was me last month. That console just swirling orange all around it. That's very real.
What an incredible, what a great, like, visual representation. Mm-hmm. Even to the point where, like, anxiety itself stops moving because anxiety's lost control, right? And so, like, mm-hmm. like, everything else, like, whatever anxiety storm has created, is keeps going. But it's like, there's nothing that anxiety can even do to control it anymore. And yeah, like, it feels very relatable, you know, especially as an adult, and, you know, you experience those things more and more. So I don't know, it's interesting to hear you guys talk about the movie, because it sounds like the movie did a good job of at least eliciting a lot of really interesting conversations and thoughts about, like, what the movie was trying to say. And even though it kind of landed in some ways and didn't in other ways, you know, I guess just to kind of close it out for me, you know, ultimately, I think that the movie largely worked for me. I really enjoyed it. It made me think a lot about these things and about growing up and what that was like for me. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, this lands for me very similar to Inside Out 1, where I really enjoyed seeing it. It elicited a strong emotion from me. I don't know when I'll watch it again. It's not like another, you know, super rewatchable Disney movie to me, but I still really enjoyed the experience of seeing it.
I think in my case, I will not be watching this for a long time, and I know that, and I think I will watch the first one again. But I mean, I am very anxious. Like, I am anxiety, but I didn't connect with that emotion as much as I think I wanted to. And maybe that's why I was a little sad that I didn't connect with it at all. Sophia, the quote, I also wrote down that same thing. Maybe when you grow up, you feel less joy. And I think that was another really revolutionary thing that could have happened in this movie, is that you see Joy cry, and we didn't see that in the first movie. So the fact that these emotions can feel other emotions at the same time, but still be yourself, like, oh my God, like, that's a movie I want to see. And for Anxiety to become the villain, yes, that was like a plot twist for me. I wrote that down. But still, it was like we were in this rudimentary world of emotions do their own thing. They can't work together. And they're either heroes or villains. And the only way to get through that is through this panic attack. Again, like, I think I'm making it into something bigger than it is.
I mean, I think the movie invites that kind of criticism when you're dealing with something so complicated. And in a movie, in the first movie where there's just a handful of emotions, it's easier to mix them all together. Where, you know, as you add all of these additional emotions, I think it does harder to become successful in, like, allowing there to be those coherent interactions between all of them that could maybe not work for you. If that's, like, what you're looking for in the movie.
I do kind of wonder, too, though, like, was Joy only able to cry in this movie because Riley had matured? Is that, like, a manifestation of her environment and her growth, right? And how her emotions are changing? I think so, but I also agree that it could have gone even deeper because there are those little, like you said, revelatory nuggets. It could have pushed it even further because it is really short. Like, this is a quick movie.
It's an hour and a half. It is like an appropriate length for a movie is how I would describe it. It is one half an Oppenheimer.
Oh my God. But Oppenheimer at times felt like it went faster than this
Guys,
movie.
I have to admit to you, I have still not watched it, and I don't know if I will.
Oh my God.
What?
Ryan.
Okay, but also, like, you loved Inception.
I do love Inception. I don't know. Inception's not a talkie movie, okay?
Okay, but this is a talkie movie, but the talkie parts are great, and it also feels like a Nolan movie at the same time. I think you'll like it. You should watch it. Okay. I'm shocked right now.
You can challenge me. Okay, that's fine. I can report back. Not on the podcast, but to you guys. I'll report back once I actually see it.
There are three distinct parts of the movie that work
very
well
so I can watch it
also,
over 3 nights.
I can't believe I said that because I realize now that that did invite that comment and that idea, but you should watch it. Anyway, I think that there are a couple of really clever details that I liked in it, and then some other things I didn't like as well. So when the original emotions go off, like they did in the first movie, when they leave headquarters and they're out on their own, we go to the vault, which is interesting because we see these different styles of animation. And that's what I was talking about earlier when I said I feel like Pixar is somewhat behind in terms of animation now, because I just started thinking about Spider-Verse and how creative and successful that movie is. And you could kind of feel like they were trying to get at what that movie does a little bit, but it just didn't work as well for me. It didn't feel as inventive, but I appreciated what they were trying to do there, especially in introducing all of these things from Riley's past that were important to her. I also loved the sarcasm. I thought that was very clever, and I did smile when that came up. I love the wordplay.
When they're yelling across the sarcasm, uh-huh. And they're trying to say it, you know, nicely, and yeah. It just comes across as, like, the biggest a-holes you've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a great
really
laugh.
I like that. Yeah.
The brainstorm, the anxiety at the very end that she drinks, like, I thought all of those puns were perfect. And, like, that was some elevation, at least for adults. You know, maybe kids don't understand that at first when they watch it, but that's for adults. And, like, great, we get that, and that adds to a movie.
And then there's, like, the deep, dark secret. Did you guys watch all the credits? Did you learn the deep, dark secret?
No, I had a giant Diet Coke, full transparency, and I left right as the credits started. So fill me in.
So if you stay through the first part of the credits, and not like the, you know, black screen scrolling names, but, you know, the pretty part, if you stay through that part, they do a scene where you learn the deep, dark secret is that Riley burnt a hole in a rug.
Did we need to stay for that? I'm glad I didn't.
In my mind, I'm like, is this going to be like some big like identity reveal, which would not seem appropriate for the movie.
Well, they kind of hint like that could be something coming, but of course they don't do it.
Not in a post-credit scene like a Disney Marvel thing, but that was also something in the movie that I thought, like, yes, I understand she's being anxious and I understand she really wants to be friends with the cool girl, the older girl at school, Val. But in my mind, like, even watching the trailer, I was like, is this a love interest? Is this a crush? Like, the way she was so anxious around here, I thought she had some underlying feeling that, again, at this age, she didn't understand, she didn't know what that was, and this is how it was manifesting it. And I was like, maybe we're going to do that. And that was not the case, but I think it would have made for a more interesting movie.
I think, like, trying to impress an older kid is, like, a common emotion as well. And so, like, part of it is, like, we bring ourselves to the movie. And so, like, you know, like, we might have that experience. And so it's easy for us to see that in the character as well.
And just me wanting Disney to push it further and me knowing they won't. And maybe
how are they going to get released in China? Okay.
It's all about the money. But it's annoying. I agree. I thought, like, I always think they're going to maybe go
there. She does have a rainbow shirt, which she outgrows. I think the rainbow shirt's from the first movie, and she outgrows it in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
There was something about rainbows also in the imaginary land, maybe, or on some of the islands. Also, how Family Island is, like, tiny.
That Family really Island is just the tiniest little island. No one even so neglected. No one cares about it because Boy Band Island is massive. Like, that, see, the movie real. Is littered with so many of these little cute moments and, like, pieces of heart that they've injected into it. Like, the couple of cameos of nostalgia coming around and, like, nope, you don't come around for later. And they, like, she has to go back in her room. Like, that's just so cute. Like, those things really leave a mark on me. Like, when you collectively add up all of them throughout the movie, like, those really enhance it.
Listen, nostalgia is operating and running my control center. She is my primary emotion.
Who we didn't list at the beginning. So June Squibb voiced Nostalgia. And then we had Diane Lane as the mom and Kyle MacLachlan as the dad. And I never knew that.
Were they the parents in the first movie?
Yeah, they were.
Okay.
Yeah, so they were Kyle MacLachlan and Diane Lane both returned.
Which the emotions of the parents are also so cute because they all have the parents' hair.
And like how sadness is always at the center of the mom's emotions. That always gets me.
Oh, and they definitely play into like the stereotypical like male dad trope where like his emotions just care about the game.
Yeah, I think overall though, like, I don't know, I agree, I don't know when I'll return to this, but I'm glad that it exists. I think it is trying to do some really creative things. I just wish it wasn't recycling the material of the first movie as much. And it did make me think of my favorite quote from one of my favorite films, The Virgin Suicides, not to get very dark, but when Cecilia says, obviously, doctor, you've never been a 13-year-old girl. It's the hardest time in your life. And yes, it took me right back to that point in time.
It's like the Dead Poets Society, another sad movie about teenagers, right? It's like another one of those movies that just teaches you, very grimly teaches you, like, oh, yeah, you forgot what it was like to be a kid.
Yeah, it's really tough. I don't wish it on anyone, even though everyone has to go through it.
I love that in the first movie, we had a Chinatown reference, and here we had a network reference, which I thought was fun coming from, I think it was Anger.
What is the Chinatown reference in the first one? I need to know.
So the Chinatown quote, they're in Imagination Land, and they're in Cloud Town, and I think one of the emotions walks through a cloud, or a cloud goes away at some point, and the cop there says, forget it, Jake, it's Cloud Town.
Oh, I must not have been paying attention in my rewatch. That's a Chinatown reference, indeed. That is not a deep cut. That is the line from Chinatown. That is the signature moment.
It's a
literally
deep cut
the
for
end quote,
people
Ryan.
Like me.
Who haven't finished it. Yes, that's fair.
So I think talking about the Oscars, this is an inevitable moment here. What do you think of its potential? Ryan at the top, I think you mentioned Moana 2, which is coming in November. And with Moana, it lost to Zootopia.
Which was the wrong decision. I mean, just in retrospect, like, Moana has aged so beautifully. And, like, who talks about Zootopia? Nobody. Moana, every kid watches it still. You got nieces, you got nephews, they're watching it.
Great soundtrack.
I think Zootopia was the better metaphor at the time, but I do agree that I would probably rather watch Moana, which I had recently. And yes, one of my favorite soundtracks, Disney soundtracks of all time, definitely. But with Inside Out won. So I'm curious, do you think this has potential to win, to get nominated? Do you think both of these sequels, Moana and this one, will get nominated in animated feature?
I was trying to think about, like, what is its potential competition? Like, within, you know, obviously you mentioned Moana 2, but then I think that Mufasa is out this year. I'm not sure if that will compete in animated, or yeah. I think it will.
I think it will. So, like photoreal. Yeah. Photorealistic animation.
So that
animation
could be potential. And then I don't know if the official release date for Beyond the Spider-Verse has been announced, but obviously the first Spider-Verse won the animated Oscar in that year. And so that is some potential competition as well. The second Spider-Verse movie didn't win. And so, you know, I'd be curious, like, what that kind of says. Like, have they moved on from that? But then, you know, the other things that are, you know, happening outside, you know, Minions 4.
Oh, my God. I'm curious what that will do at the box office compared to Inside Out 2, because those things just dominate worldwide.
Yeah, I wonder, for me, it's like, what are the things, it's Despicable Me 4, how did I screw that up? But what are the things kind of that are outside the kind of the Disney animation and the Illumination that, you know, are there going to be some, like, dark horse candidates that, you know, will do something innovative and fresh that might, you know, be attractive to the Academy?
Well, Nick, I was going to ask you about this because we love these two. There's a new Wallace and Gromit movie coming to Netflix, Wallace and Gromit: Vengeance Most Foul. I just don't know the release date, because it says winter 2025, but the movie will hit the BBC on Christmas. So I'm just not sure when it will be released, if we'll do like a qualifying run or how that will work, but that would definitely be on my list, coming from Aardman and with Netflix as well. But I think Inside Out 2 has immense potential, especially given its dominance right now and people really liking it. I'm also wondering about the Lord of the Rings, the War of the Rohirrim. That's going to be Warner Brothers. So that could maybe come up. And Moana 2, I saw the trailer for Moana 2 ahead of Inside Out 2. And the crowd went wild. Let me just tell you, the kids in the crowd started screaming. So this soundtrack is playing in the homes of families across America.
The other one for me that I was curious about is the creator of Harvey Crumpet and Marion Max. So he has a new film out, Memoir of a Snail, which just won at the Annecy Awards. So that could be in there. Flow is another film that won some awards. So I think there are other, at least when we're talking about animation, like, there's claymation in there. It's not just Disney or Pixar, which is always the question now, I think. So I guess at this point, I would say they both have the ability to get nominated, especially with the box office. If it, like, goes crazy and hits $1 billion, I think we will be talking about this through the end of the year. But it does depend a lot on those fall, winter release dates for other movies that we don't even know about yet.
Mm-hmm. The last one I'll briefly mention is one called The Wild Robot, which is DreamWorks. And this is directed by Chris Sanders, who did Lilo and Stitch and How to Train Your Dragon. So that could also pop up.
Well, I have no clue who's going to win this year, but I do want to take an opportunity to use this platform to say that Marcel the Shell with Shoes On was robbed and deserved to win the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature.
I agree. I loved Marcel the Shell with Shoes On. And I think I picked that as my winner when we did the Contender Series that year.
I don't remember even who won, but it doesn't matter because it should have been Marcel the Shell.
Well, with that one, there was that whole debate about, you know, is this really an animated feature?
Well, it's, you know, it is like, if, like, any Avengers movie is live action, then should Marcel the Shell not be live action?
Of course, we got back to the Avengers.
Yeah, of course. It's everyone's touchstone.
You're always keeping the listeners on their toes, Ryan.
I'm just giving them what they can't get from you.
That's fair.
Man of the people. So if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I'll go first. I'm going to give mine to Adele Exarchopoulos, Best Supporting Actress, for her work as Ennui.
Ennui!
Making this character a French woman, genius.
And also attached also to their cell phone the entire time.
Attached to her phone.
And the best part of the movie is at the end when they ask Riley, so how is your camp? And she just like gives a one-word response at what Ennui's direction.
The fact that she has the console as an app on her phone so she can just lay around and stare at it. She was my favorite character. I mean, really, like, Maya Hawke is probably the performance we should be talking about, but I'm going to go with Adele in supporting actress and pick something fun here.
Given the competition that we talked about, I'll be lazy. I'll just say best animated feature.
That's fair. I think that's the most likely place where we're going to see it. Nick, let me reframe the question. If you had to give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
This is an accidental tourist situation, and I really don't know.
Oh my God.
There's just absolutely nothing you could imagine it winning.
I want to give screenplay honorable mention because of all of its puns, and I think there's some witty lines there, you know, including movie references that we talked about. And
is it harder to win adapted versus original?
Depends on the year.
I think as a sequel, it would be adapted.
Yeah. It would be.
I feel like an animated film would do better as original. I mean, that's where it was up nominated there.
And Ratatouille.
But I think, you know, in awarding Adele, I'll go with Io and award her as Envy. I think it was my favorite voice work from the movie, and maybe that's just her as an actress, but I had the most fun listening to her, watching her, apart from embarrassment when he just like lays on the console, which I totally loved. I don't know. Phyllis's sadness is close to also June is nostalgia, but yeah, I did love her as Envy, so I'll give it to her.
For a guy who really didn't like this movie, he seems to have a lot of nice things to say about it.
Which emotion is taking control of the console right now at the end of the episode? Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us again. We always love having you on, even though you've never seen Chinatown, and I'm sure you're excited for Deadpool and Wolverine.
I've seen one third of Chinatown. Excuse you.
True. But in all seriousness, thank you. We always love having you on.
It's always a great time to be here and get to talk about movies with you guys. It makes me remember why I love them so much.
Oh.
Well, that's sweet. Yeah, thank you, Ryan, for coming.
Well, next time on Oscar Wilde, we will not be talking about Deadpool and Wolverine. At least I don't think so. We will be doing our very first Oscar predictions for next year's Oscars. I'm really excited to do this. We have so much fun with this every year because we don't really take it too seriously. I think we mostly just get really excited about the contenders we have coming up and the movies that we haven't seen yet. Maybe a very few that we have. We'll see. I'm excited to talk about these, though.
Me too. This is kind of the first time it starts to solidify in terms of us having Cannes already and some of the bigger releases coming with release dates. So we'll mention some of those, I'm sure. But if you've listened to these episodes before, we do the big six categories. So we do picture, director, and all the acting categories.
Well, thank you so much again, Ryan, for joining us. Thank you all for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at OscarWildPod. And if you really like our show, you can subscribe at patreon.com/OscarWild for bonus content.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.